With the NFL draft less than a month away, the Green Bay Packers have been busy attending pro day workouts looking at prospects. Who have they been watching? We'll ask Scott Wright of NFLDraftCountdown.com. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Packers fans, welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football. We're talking about the NFL offseason and getting ready for the NFL draft. To do that, we have a guest joining us on the phone today. We have Scott Wright of NFLDraftCountdown.com.
Expert interview.
Mr. Wright, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing excellent. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Pretty much an annual appearance for you on the show, and we're grateful to get your insight every year. Scott, we kind of have a theme for today's show, and it's where the Green Bay Packers were watching pro days last week. And let's start at Ole Miss, where the Packers had a representative in attendance, and Robert Kemdiche. I think everybody knows Robert Kemdiche is a freak of nature, but I want to know from you, is that athleticism enough to overcome the off-the-field concerns and make him a first-round pick?
I think it might be in the end, and his draft stock is probably as volatile as any prospect in this draft. And if you look up boom or bust in the dictionary, there's probably a picture of Robert Kemdiche. It could honestly go either way, and if he was clean off the field and didn't have the character concerns, he'd probably be going in the top five overall of this draft. He's that type of talent. But it's not even just the character concerns, too. It's also the lack of production. A little bit of an underachiever. Just wasn't as productive as you'd expect a guy that talented to be. I believe he only had 7 career sacks in 3 full seasons. And there were flashes of dominance. You could definitely see the potential there, but just didn't play to that level consistently. To a certain degree, you have he's kind of a defensive tackle version of Jadeveon Clowney in that regard. But at a certain point, the potential rewards start to outweigh the risks. And I think it's be around the middle of the first round. I've had him go into the Buffalo Bills in my mock draft for the last couple of versions. I think that's a potential good fit. But honestly, it could be anywhere from, I think, the early teens to maybe falling out of the first round completely. It's that wide of a range. And there really is no magic formula that all teams are going to view the situation one specific way. It's very much going to be a case of beauty in the eye of the beholder, and every team's going to have to kind of make a determination for themselves at what point it is where the rewards do outweigh the risks. But boy, is he talented.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where all it takes is one for one team to like him and love him and make him a first-round pick. But let's stick at Ole Miss.
I was just going to add one. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, he does very much fit into the mold, too, of some of the players that the Packers have drafted in recent years, whether it be a Mike Daniels, a Kyree Thornton. He's kind of that undersized, athletic, quick defensive tackle. Could also be that 5 technique defensive end in an odd front. So if he were there for the Packers, I think as a player, he kind of fits what they do, although I don't know if that's the type of player they're looking for right now. But at the end of the day, I just have a hard time seeing Ted Thompson going down that road with Kemdiche.
Yeah, I doubt the Packers make him a first-round pick, but that you're right. He does fit what they do. I do like his athleticism, if nothing else. But let's stick at Ole Miss, Scott. Is Laquon Treadwell fast enough to become a true number one wide receiver in the NFL? Because I think people, after seeing his pro day last week, kind of have questions about that 40 speed.
Yeah, and I think anybody who was swayed by his 40 time at a pro day wasn't doing the work beforehand, because it was obvious he wasn't going to run well.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what everybody expected. And he ran right about what everybody expected. And it kind of goes to the silliness of some of these workout results. He ran a 4.65. That's an awful time. He's going to drop. If he'd run a 4.59, everyone would have said, oh, yeah, 4.5. That's about what we thought. So 6 one-hundredths of a second is kind of painting this this picture. But ultimately, and I've said this all along, he's not Calvin Johnson. He wasn't A.J. Green or Julio Jones. He's not that level of prospect. I could compare him to value-wise to Michael Crabtree, maybe a Justin Blackmon. At best, he was maybe a back end of the top 10 type. And I think what this did is maybe close the gap a little bit between him and Corey Coleman from Baylor, Josh Doctson from TCU. And there's a chance Treadwell won't be the first wide receiver off the board, but he's going to be one of the two or three first wideouts off the board in the top 25. And honestly, I don't care how fast he runs in shorts. If you watch on film, he plays faster. He's not the second coming of Mike Wallace or anything like that, but he's very fast on field fast, and he gets the job done on the field. Our catches contested, sure, there's usually a defensive back there with him, but he's got such outstanding ball skills and body control that he wins those 50-50 opportunities. So he's going to go somewhere in that 10 to 25 range, and I think that's probably where he belongs value-wise. And I still have him as my number one receiver in this draft, and the slow 40 time was not unexpected.
Let's go to TCU, and we'll stick with the wide receiver theme where Josh Doctson worked out in front of scouts last week. Is Doctson good enough to be the best wide receiver in this year's draft class? I might think he is, but I know people have kind of varying perspectives on that.
I'm with you. I really like Josh Doctson. I think he's being underrated, especially after he worked out better than people expected at the scouting combine. Everyone kind of questioned, oh, does he have the sheer speed? But he ran in the 4.4 range and vertical leaped over 40 inches. So really tested out better athletically than we thought. And the film is outstanding. He's got the size. He's got, once again, the body control and the ball skills, which go a long way in the NFL. And he's just a smooth receiver. I kind of think of him as a poor man's Amari Cooper. I think he's that type of player. And I think there's a really good chance that not only could he be the first wide receiver off the board on draft day, but 5 years from now, we could look back and say he was the best wideout to come out of this class. A little rough around the edges playing in that TCU system. He's got to polish up his route running and things of that nature. But he is a really talented pass catcher. And not only does he have all the obvious things, but he does all the little things as well. Just a really good football player, high intangibles. And I actually got to see him in person early in the season. I believe it was their opening game of the season against the University of Minnesota. And I just came away extremely impressed with him. Not only did he have a good game, he did it against two pro NFL quality cornerbacks in Eric Murray and Brian Bodie Calhoun from the Gophers. So I think Josh Doctson's a legitimate first-round pick, and I have him going to the Minnesota Vikings in my latest mock draft.
That would be a tough matchup for the Green Bay Packers if he were to go there. But let's take a look at another pro day. The Packers were at Boise State, where I think the main attraction there was linebacker Kamale Correa, if I'm pronouncing that right, one of those Polynesian names.
Really?
But Scott, as Correa solidified himself as a first-round draft pick.
Solidified, no, but I think he very much solidified himself as in the mix.
And okay.
I always say there's such little difference between the 50th pick and the 31st pick. It truly does just come down to the draft order, team needs, but value-wise, you're getting the same type of player late in the second round as you are late in the first round most years. And Correa, I think his workouts certainly solidified him in that mix, and he has a lot of fans. Pretty good length, 6'2", 5'8", 243 pounds. He ran a sub-4.7, a guy who played defensive end in college but could project a 3-4 outside linebacker at the next level, and a player whose best football is still ahead of him. I don't think he's as good of a prospect as, say, DeMarcus Lawrence was out of that same program a couple of years ago, but just a notch below that. And I won't be at all surprised if he goes late in the first round. And if the Packers are looking for a pass rusher in that range, I think he's going to be one of the guys in that conversation. So somewhere in the top 50, if he doesn't come off the board late round one, he's going to be early to middle round two.
Interesting. Let's go to Notre Dame. Defensive lineman Sheldon Day. I've heard some people compare Day to Packers defensive lineman Mike Daniels, another one of those kind of undersized defensive linemen, but still productive. Do you think that comparison is accurate?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good comparison. And Sheldon Day is a really good football player. The problem is, physical. He doesn't have that prototypical size that you look for either in terms of the length or the bulk. He's only 6'5", 293 pounds. And then there's some durability concerns there. Will he be able to stay healthy? Will he be able to hold up? But you watch the film, and all he does is make plays. And I think the most intriguing thing about Sheldon Day is the versatility. Not only does he can he play 4-3 or 3-4 defensive end or 5 technique, but he actually has experience doing all of that. There's film of him during his college career playing in these different schemes, playing in these different positions. So I think it just comes down to getting comfortable with the physical limitations and medically. I'd be interested to know how he checked out medically, if there's any red flags there. If he's fine medically, I think he goes somewhere round 3. I think that's the range for a player like that. If there's some medical concerns, I wouldn't even be shocked if he slid to the beginning of day 3. If for no other reason than this is just such an incredibly strong class of defensive tackles, somebody's going to inevitably slip. There's just, on average, there's been about 9 defensive tackles taken in the top 3 rounds over the last decade. This year, it could very well be 14 or 15. So I think that's going to lead to one of these, at least one or two of these guys who at one point in the process was probably being talked about as maybe a potential late first-round pick, is probably going to still be there at the beginning of round 4. But that's more a product of just the depth of this class. And I think teams are going to realize, hey, we don't necessarily have to spend big right away. We can get a second-round talent in the 3rd or maybe even 4th round.
That's nice to think if you're the Green Bay Packers, thinking that you could get a guy, you could wait and still get a good player later on. We're talking to Scott Wright of NFL Draft Countdown here at Railbird Central on a Monday morning. Scott, let's wrap up. In the state of Florida, the Packers sent a representative to the University of Miami. I'm interested in cornerback Artie Burns, because Green Bay has a history of going after Miami cornerbacks like Sam Shields and Ladarius Gunter last year. How does Burns stack up to them?
Burns is definitely one of the top corners in this draft. I think one of the top 5 or 6 cover guys available. And he's going to be a top 50 pick, I think. And you know, the Hurricanes have a pretty good track record when it comes to producing pro defensive backs. I think when you talk about pedigree, the Hurricanes are about as good as you get at that position. And he's just under 6 feet tall, 193 pounds. He ran a mid 4.4, really checks all the boxes physically and good tape. So I think Artie Burns is going to be kind of right there battling in that second tier corner. Of course, you have Jalen Ramsey from Florida State, who's going to come off the board in the top 3 to 5 overall. And then after that, I think Vernon Hargraves from Florida will be the next. But then he's going to be right after that next group of Eli Apple, Mackenzie Alexander, William Jackson III. I think Burns is right there battling late first round, early to mid-second round, and definitely one of the top cover guys in this draft. And of course, the Packers last year, that's probably not going to be in their range after they made the investments in Demaryius Randall and Quentin Rollins last year. But I really think Green Bay, they're going to focus and emphasize the defensive front 7 this year, whether it's nose tackle, whether it's inside linebacker, outside linebacker, pass rushes. I think that's going to be the focus. And just like they emphasized the secondary last year early on, I could see them doing that with a defensive front 7. In fact, in my latest mock draft, I think I have all three of their picks in the top 3 rounds. I believe I have them going nose tackle, inside linebacker, outside linebacker.
Who do you have them going in the first round?
Yep, I actually have them taking Jaron Reed, the nose tackle out of Alabama, who would not only address a need, but I think would be outstanding value there late in the first round. And even if he's gone, they could audible to someone like Vernon Butler from Louisiana Tech. In round 2, I have him taking Joshua Perry, the inside linebacker from Ohio State, who I'm a big fan of. He's not as good of a prospect as Reggie Ragland of Alabama, but value-wise, they're similar types of players. And I think I'd rather have Joshua Perry in the 2nd or 3rd round than Ragland in, say, the top 20 overall. And then in the 3rd round, I have him taking Kyler Fackrell, the outside linebacker from Utah State, a tall, rangy, edge pass rusher. He's 6'5", 245. Really athletic to kind of groom as a replacement maybe for Julius Peppers. So I think the defensive front 7 is going to be the absolute emphasis for Green Bay. But as I always say with the Packers, Ted Thompson kind of marches to the beat of his own drummer, and they're tough to get a read on. You never really feel confident that you know what they're going to do. But I think logically, if you look at their situation, I think that defensive front 7 is glaring for some reinforcements.
Well, speaking of that, one last pro day here to go through, Scott. Florida State, the Packers had a representative, a scout in attendance there. And I know kind of Jalen Ramsey was the main attraction, but the Packers aren't going to get a crack at him. So I'll ask instead about Nile Lawrence Stample. Is he draftable material?
He's on the fringe, and he's a big guy. I think that's one thing that works in his favor. He's 6'1", 320 pounds. Had a relatively high grade coming into the season. I think that was probably a little overblown at the time, but no question, the Packers are going to be looking for a nose tackle, maybe even a couple. I think depth along that defensive line is going to be key for them, and I think Lawrence Stample is going to be in that mix. But Florida State has a lot of prospects that they could have been targeting, whether it be the mid to late rounds. They're loaded as they always are. Maybe not quite as much this year as the past year or two, but they're the type of program that kind of reloads rather than rebuilds. And they're the program that, even if they don't have a ton of prospects for this year's draft at their pro day, you go in there and you're getting information on next year's upcoming seniors. And I think that's an underrated aspect of this pro day, too. Everyone talks about the current class, but the scouts are already working on 2017. They're already in these programs doing their due diligence, gathering information, and some of these soon-to-be seniors are already working out for teams to kind of get baseline scores and 40-yard dash, the Wunderlich, et cetera. So it's a year-round process, and even though we're all focused on 2016, the NFL has already, at least the scouting portion of it, has already kind of turned their attention to 2017.
Very good point, Scott. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Appreciate your insight and analysis you bring us, and we'll do it again next year.
It was my pleasure. Anytime.
All right. Take care, Scott.
Take care.
Scott Wright of NFL Draft Countdown joining us here on a Monday morning at Railbird Central. Thanks to him for joining us. Thanks to you, the listener, for joining us as well as we continue on with the show.
Packers news of the day.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers, this Monday, the news over the weekend was that the Packers have officially lost linebacker Andy Malumba, signing a one-year deal with the Kansas City Chiefs. Reportedly a one-year deal with a small signing bonus that, according to Tom Silverstein of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, this is something we talked about on the last episode of Railbird Central on Friday. Back then, Malumba had just, you know, we reported he had visits with the New England Patriots and the Kansas City Chiefs, and eventually signing with the Kansas City Chiefs. So nothing coming out of the blue here. I said, you know, last Friday, I'm not going to beat a dead horse because I, you know, made this kind of a main talking point for the show last week. I think it's unfortunate because I would have liked to have seen the Packers given Malumba, you know, a one-year offer, basically a minimum NFL deal. I think it would have been worth to have him back once again because, you know, when I watch him, maybe not on special teams where he doesn't seem to offer much, but on defense, I like what he did out there. I personally would go to training camp myself and watch him and think he's worthy of a roster spot. I have no illusions or disillusions of him being a Pro Bowler or anything like that. But I do think he could have, you know, taken up a spot on the depth chart and provided the Packers perhaps against some loss down the road when you're looking at all the guys who are working on, you know, one-year deals with the Packers, or not one-year deals, but in the last year of their deal, Nick Perry, Julius Peppers, guys who could be gone a year from now, Dayton Jones, Jayron Elliott. You never know what's going to happen with them, and that's why I'd like to see them keep Malumba in the fold, but ultimately, it did not happen, and Malumba is a member officially of the Kansas City Chiefs as of over the weekend. And speaking over the weekend, another piece of news, an item coming across my Twitter feed. Aaron Rodgers played a round of golf with the leader of the free world over the weekend. That, according to Darren Rovell of ESPN, that's who I saw it reported first, and the leader of the free world being United States President Barack Obama. So just interesting, nothing big here. It wasn't, you know, a PGA Tour event like Rodgers has, you know, competed in the Pebble Beach Pro-Am at times in the past, but Just a friendly round of golf with the President of the United States. They've met once before. You'll remember that when the Packers won the Super Bowl, Aaron Rodgers and company were able to meet Barack Obama. And I know Barack Obama, you know, being a Chicago resident and a Bears fan, has joked in the past in interviews that the Bears should trade for Aaron Rodgers. But yeah, so they get to spend some time in person. Apparently the foursome also consisted of ESPN's Tony Kornheiser. You've seen him on Pardon the Interruption, as well as astronaut Mark Kelly. And there's a connection there between Aaron Rodgers as well. Mark Kelly is who Rodgers competed against on Celebrity Jeopardy last offseason. If you remember his appearance on the television game show that Rodgers ultimately ended up winning that episode. But the two have apparently remained friends or acquaintances at least, and getting together with most notably the President of the United States for a round of golf on Saturday. So that was kind of interesting that I found that out. Finally, the NFL announced the dates for every team's off-season workout program. As we're just cared about the Green Bay Packers here, the Packers start their off-season program on April 18th. So just, about 2 weeks down the road, 2 weeks from today, actually, I believe the program starts. So pretty much the players have two more weeks of vacation should they wish to take it. It's probably getting to the point where players, they probably take vacation shortly after the season. And now's the time when they're beginning to work out and get ready for the off-season program, even though they ease back into it at team facilities. If you remember, the NFL's workout program is broken up into stages, and like the very first 2 weeks, all that takes place is strength and conditioning. They aren't allowed to hit the practice field. They aren't even allowed to, I don't know, quarterbacks might be allowed to throw the football or something like that, just in terms of working their arm out, but there's no, 11-on-11 or anything like that. So for 2 weeks, simply strength and conditioning, that's all that's really happening there. No football activities really taking place. But then the NFL announcing the OTA dates, and this is where they finally start practicing. This is where you'll see reports from practice during the offseason. This doesn't begin until the month of May, so it takes a while for them to build up to this. But some interesting, the Packers, going a little bit different direction in that they're kind of breaking these up a little bit. They have OTAs practices taking place May 23rd and 24th, May 26th, May 31st, June 1st and 2nd, June 6th and 7th, and June 9th and 10th. So, there's a range there, basically about 4 weeks, a span of 4 weeks there during which they're holding practices, OTAs. These, of course, are voluntary. The NFL cannot, or according to the league's collective bargaining agreement, not make these mandatory, even though the Packers typically have, 99%, participation rate. So it's typically not a big deal. They basically get 99% of the players to take part in these, and part of it's because for many of the players they build workout bonuses into their contracts. So if they come in and work out and take part in practice, they're actually getting paid for it. So for most players, they're happy to do it. But then finally, the one mandatory, they can have one mandatory minicamp in which all players must absolutely take part. And if they would not, they would be subject to fine. That takes place for the Green Bay Packers June 14 to 16. And all players have to be there. So anyway, those are your dates for the Packers off-season program. I know Mike McCarthy has alluded to, I believe it was in his interviews at the NFL owners meetings, a week and a half ago or so, that it seems like there's going to be times in which they're planning for practices for the younger players on their roster. Mike McCarthy has done this in the past, but it seems like they're going to take it to an even greater level this year, in which there will be days that the veterans have the day off. And I'm not sure exactly how they've broken it up. I think in years past, sometimes it's been like, if you're a veteran of 5 years or older, or maybe it's 6 years, maybe it's that five is the cutoff there. Veterans of 6 years in the NFL and more get the day off, where veterans, you know, 5 years and younger have to stay in practice. I'm not sure where Mike McCarthy's going to make the cutoff date, but maybe that's why the OTA program seems to be broken up a little bit more than usual this year. I'm not sure what the Packers have in mind there. I'll be interesting to see what they do there in terms of, you know, breaking things up for the younger players versus the older players. We'll keep an eye on that, of course. It's down the road, and we're talking about by the time they hit the practice field, you know, the rookies are already part of the team. So we'll be talking about, you know, draft picks and undrafted free agents taking part in this as well. So anyway, just something to keep in mind as we're going forward. And to wrap up the show today,
the day ahead
in the world of the Green Bay Packers, this Monday taking place today, I think the lot of the sporting world's attention is going to be elsewhere other than football today, in that it's baseball's opening day. The Milwaukee Brewers have their first game of the season today after, you know, there were games in Major League Baseball taking place on Sunday. Not only that, but tonight the NCAA basketball championship game takes place. So lot happening other than, you know, the world of the NFL. But if there's one small thing happening today, the NFL's personal finance camp takes place with three Packers taking part. This was announced last week, but if you'll remember, defensive lineman Julius Peppers and Mike Daniels, along with punter Tim Mastay, they're all taking part in this. So that's taking place starting today. It's 4 days total. Like I said, down in Florida. So they're taking part in that. But other than that, it is the last week of pro days. We talked about all the pro days with Scott Wright earlier in the show. This is the last, absolute last week any colleges will be holding pro day workouts. Now, teams can still bring players in for visits, things like that. They can fly them into Green Bay and talk to them prior to the NFL draft. But anyway, those pro days taking place today, and there's, like I said, it's tapering off here. The only ones taking place today, Monday, are at West Virginia and Arkansas State. So the two notable ones right there. And by, I think it's Wednesday, will be the absolute last ones, unless any team has changed a workout or something that I have not yet seen. So we're getting to the very bitter end here of the scouting process and working our way up to the NFL draft. So that'll be fun when we actually get to draft time and talk about, you know, talking about these guys in a pro uniform instead of just speculating about it like we did today. But anyway, that'll do it for today's episode. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us here. And just as, you know, some housekeeping duties, no longer is Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports. In fact, I may have accidentally just because it's become ingrained in me and just something I've said every day for the pretty much the past year or every episode, at least. Yeah, no longer is Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports after parting ways with them. I'm a free agent and excited to take the next step in my career. But yeah, so the show continues at Cheesehead TV and, of course, via our live stream platform. So you can watch and listen to Railbird Central there. Same schedule, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, the live edition of the show, podcasted and on demand later in the day. And that does it, folks. My call to action, as always, as usual, if you've not done so already, please give us a rating and a review on iTunes. It's the one small thing we ask. The show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. If you could go to iTunes, search Cheesehead TV, it'll pop right up. We'd greatly appreciate it if you would. But that'll do it, folks. We'll be back again on Wednesday and talking more Packers football. We'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called Velvet Red by Conspirator on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack Go. We'll be right back.